If you have never been to the Huldah Klager Lilac Gardens in Woodland, Washington, I urge you to go, especially in late April or early May when the trees are at their most fragrant. Please raise your hand if you have been there. Oh, good. The rest of you, seriously, it's absolutely stunning. After reading a book about hybridization while she was recovering from an illness, Huldah Klager tried her hand at that, first with apples and then with lilacs, so that by the time of her death, she had developed over 250 varieties of lilacs, 90 of which you can see in Woodland, Washington, just up the road. So I've been wondering what compels someone like Huldah Klager, or Luther Burbank, who wrote the book that she had read, or Rudolf Boysen of Boysenberry fame, to try to create a new thing out of old things. This week, I wondered if any of them had read Paul's letter to the Romans and got considered the wild and cultivated olive trees and were inspired to try the same themselves. To hybridize something or to graft one thing onto another is often to take two very different things to make something new that may be more beautiful or stronger. Now, if we think of God as a gardener, which is not a bad metaphor for God, we could wonder about God's creation of a new thing in the work of Jesus and the birth of the church. We borrow this image from the Apostle Paul, who creates this metaphor of the olive tree, which was so prevalent in his world. Now, if you were to read most of Paul's writings or the entire letter to the Romans, you would see that one of his biggest concerns is the creation of what we today call Christianity. Paul didn't call it that. Paul understood that Jesus was the Messiah of the Jews, and so those who chose to follow Jesus and who gathered to worship God in Jesus were still Jews. Early on, Paul had high hopes that Jews would understand the way of Jesus was the fulfillment of Judaism and not a new religion. But over the course of his ministry, Paul lost that hope. He understood that some of his fellow Jews would continue to worship in the synagogue, as would Gentiles. But some Jews and some Gentiles did choose to follow the way of Jesus. They met in homes to share meals, to tell the stories about Jesus, and to hear Paul's letters read aloud. And in the reading we heard today, Paul is arguing for inclusion in this new community of Jesus followers. He's writing to a group of people he has never met. He's writing to a group of Jesus followers in the great city of Rome, where all the power of the emperor resides, and where the followers of Jesus are most resisted and persecuted. You would think that he would write a word of encouragement, but that's not what the letter to the Romans is. It is rather a sophisticated and deep teaching about faith, about who God is and what God calls followers to do. One of the things they're called to do is not to think so highly of themselves that they must think less of others. Paul is trying to build what we would call a church, and it would be a church of equals, with no regard for wealth or social status or nationality or religious background. Fast forward 2,000 years, and we're still trying to build that church. And by we, I mean Christians throughout the world, and by the church, I mean the community of believers who follow Jesus. Even today, we're still trying to build a church of equals with no regard for wealth, social status, nationality, or religious background. Christianity around the world does not look a lot like Christianity in the United States. The church in South America and Africa is vibrant, and its worship would probably be unrecognizable to us. But even in the U.S., a church can seem unfamiliar. A few years ago, I was asked to preach at Genesis Community Fellowship, one of our ministry partners, on the occasion of the anniversary of the ordination of their pastor, Don Frazier. Genesis has been renting space to a Congolese congregation, and they were also part of that service. I will tell you that most of the worship felt very unfamiliar to me, but I did recognize that it was worship rooted in a love of God. The service began with a half hour of music led by a band, and the Congolese songs were thrown in. The Congolese congregation that was there were dressed. The women were in beautiful African cloths with headwear. The men were dressed in beautiful African cloths. And every time one of the Congolese songs came on, they all stood up. They danced around the sanctuary. They were blowing these little pipe whistles. They were clapping their hands with joy for all that God had done for them. I remember that every time we hesitate to politely applaud when we hear beautiful music. There's a reason some people call us the Frozen Chosen. Last year, when I attended the Next Church conference, I was struck by an address by Dr. Soong Chan Ra, who is assistant professor of church growth and evangelism at North Park Seminary in Chicago. He woke us up to the reality of what Christianity looks like around the world, which is not much like us. And he spoke about starting a multi-ethnic congregation in Boston. And then in a later interview, he was reflecting on the church in the U.S. and its core nature. And he said, "I was a pastor for 15 years, 10 of those in one church, and that deeply shaped the way I view how people change." Two variables are helpful, and you have to have both. One is a place of safety. A place where you feel safe enough to ask stupid questions, make mistakes, and feel affirmed in your basic identity. That, by the way, is often why people go to single ethnic churches, because they're safe. We feel safer with people who are like us and understand us. But we also need the flip side of that, which is a place of discomfort. Most of us don't grow unless there's a reason to grow, unless discomfort is introduced. And usually that is introduced by people who are different. That's why it's hard to establish multi-ethnic churches, because you have to have both. You've got to have places of safety, but you also need a place of challenge where people will say, "Hey, maybe you need to think about that a little more." And he concludes, "Safety and challenge are things I hope the church could offer. That would be a great church, wouldn't it? A place where people can say, I'm affirmed here. God accepts me as I am. But at the same time, the community has challenged me to grow in areas that I would not thought of unless I'd been part of this community." Creating a diverse church reminds me of what Paul was doing, and all those hybridists, making new things out of unlike things. We Christians were once wild olives grafted onto the cultivated tree of Israel. 2,000 years later, I would say that grafting is complete, but I suspect that God is still grafting wild olives onto the tree. So let me ask you this. Do you remember the first time you came to Westminster for worship? Do you remember looking at the bulletin and thinking, "This isn't anything like my last church"? Or maybe you remember thinking, "I have no idea what is going on or what I'm supposed to do, but I have a sense that I'm supposed to be here, so I'm going to stick with it." Or maybe you looked around and saw familiar faces or people who looked like you, and you thought you'd be fine here. Or maybe someone was here and no one looked like them, and they didn't come back. Often when we have gatherings of leaders of the church, Greg and I hear people express the desire for our congregation to be more diverse. I'm not always sure what they mean by that. We're a pretty white group on the whole, but then Portland is a pretty white city. Most of our folks tend to lean a little left of center rather than right of center, politically speaking, but we've got everything here. On the whole, we've got a lot of people with graduate degrees. Most of our members are straight, but some are gay, lesbian, and transgender. Few of our members were born in a country other than the United States, and few members in our community are homeless. Having a more diverse Westminster could be a great thing, depending on the motivation behind it. If we want people who are different from us to be here so that we feel good about ourselves and so that they will become like us, that's not good. But if we want people who are different from us to be here because it would challenge our comfort and because we might all grow a little, well, that would be a good thing and a hard thing. We wild olive branches have grown tame over the years, and it's hard to tell the difference between what was once the cultivated branch and what was the wild one. But both survived and thrived, not on their own accord, but because they shared a common root. The same holds true for us here at Westminster. If we remain rooted in God, if we remember that we are beloved, and so is everyone else, if we remember that each of us is God's favorite, as Eileen said, then whatever branch we're grafted onto, or whatever branch is grafted onto us, will survive and thrive, not of our own accord, but because we are deeply rooted in God. I'm really struck with the challenge that Professor Raw put out there when he said, "Safety and challenge are things I hope the church could offer." That would be a great church, wouldn't it? A place where people can say, "I'm affirmed here, God accepts me as I am, but at the same time, the community has challenged me to grow in areas I would not have thought of unless I'd been part of this community." That would be a church that had been grafted with some fine wild olives. What might that look like for Westminster? I think we're only at the beginning of some pencil sketches for what it would look like. Our study on Jim Wallace's book, America's Original Sin, is a good start, as is our hosting dramas about the African-American experience here in Northeast Portland. Our two Abrahamic Thanksgiving services have begun our relationship with our Muslim and Jewish neighbors. Often in the church, we find comfort in the same. If we want to find people who are different from us, if we want to know and understand people who are different, we're going to have to leave the safety and comfort of these walls. If we want the church to be more diverse, our own circles need to be more diverse. That means taking risks and being uncomfortable and being humble enough to learn from people who are not like us. If we're going to grow from a pencil sketch to a full-blown masterpiece, we have work to do. I think it's worth it. Do you?